You do have strong men coming back in Venezuela, Ecuador, Argentina, Nicaragua. But you have other countries like Chile, Colombia, Peru, Brazil, where institutions seem like they're starting to take hold.
Hi, I'm Nick Gillespie for Reason TV. Today we're talking with Mary Anastasia O'Grady of the Wall Street Journal editorial board, as well as the America's columnist. Mary, thanks for taking time with us. In the 90s, there was a real optimism for economic and political liberalization in Latin America. Looking at the latest, the 2010 Index of Economic Freedom, Chile is number 10, then the next country is El Salvador at number 32. Did the liberalization work? Did it fail?
Well, I actually think that what's happening in Latin America is a kind of bifurcation of the region. The promising thing about the 90s is they were trying to get the government out of the economy. But, you know, these processes are not linear, and it does matter the sequence that you do them, and it also matters if you do them only halfway. So in the case of a lot of the governments, they privatized industries, but they ended up having no real acknowledgement of the importance of the rule of law. They also, maybe they tried to anchor their currencies, but then they did not do the thing. They did not stop the central bank from lending to the government. I think what's important to recognize is that it's a process. You do have strong men coming back in Venezuela, Ecuador, Argentina, Nicaragua, but you have other countries like Chile, Colombia, Peru, Brazil, where institutions seem like they're starting to take hold.
Is there a particular country south of the U.S.-Mexican border that would provide a model for the rest of the region?
Well, Chile has done a good job. I mean, it backtracked a little bit over the last decade, but I think it's done a pretty good job, and it has certainly very admirable institutions.
What has it done right?
The main thing Chile did was it opened its market. Trade opening is the wedge, because once you open, you have to compete with the world.
Well, let's talk about drug-related violence. Colombia's former president, Uribe, was praised for drastic crime reduction. There were significant drops in the poverty and unemployment rates during his tenure. On the other hand, he's got a lot of human rights violations or charges about that. Did he do well or did he do badly?
I think he did very well. I mean, you know, you mentioned the human rights violations. I think it was in the interests of the guerrillas who are, the Marxist guerrillas who have been in Colombia for 50 years, to allege human rights violations. And in fact, I did a lot of work on that where what I found was that there was a law that said if someone comes into the courtroom and accuses a military leader of a human rights violation, that military leader must be removed from his post, or the government of Colombia will lose its funding from the U.S. for that unit of the military. And so that motivated a lot of charges of human rights violations. Basically, what Uribe did, which really made a difference in Colombia, was that he went out and gave people protection in the rural areas. Within the cities, it was okay, but in the rural areas, population was very vulnerable.
Now that he's out of office, will crime stay at the level it's at, or will it come back up?
Well, I think he did a very good job also of sort of beheading the leadership of the FARC, which was really a big part of the violence. And I think what's happened there is a lot of the business has gone to countries which don't have so much emphasis on security.
What can the U.S. do to minimize drug violence along the Mexican border?
Well, the best thing, I think, would be to lift the prohibition on drugs. I mean, all of the income from drug use in the U.S. goes directly into the pockets of criminals. The Mexican Attorney General had estimated with me, and this goes back 4 years, that something like $10 billion in cash goes across the border and right into the pockets of criminals in Mexico.
So end the drug war, end the violence in the same way that when we had prohibition against alcohol, it created violence.
Kind of thing,
if we prohibited Mexican butter, there would probably be gun battles over that. How do you do that politically in a U.S. climate?
To put that message out there, that it's not the same as endorsing drug use or embracing that lifestyle.
Lost half of Reason's audience, but continue, please.
What it is about saying, what are the costs and benefits of the current policy? What are the costs and benefits of other policies that we might pursue? All of this money flowing to the pockets of criminals immediately implies corruption. I mean, undermines the institutions. And institutions, as we talk about all the time, the importance of institutions in developing economies. But the other thing is, I do not think that the solution to this problem will come from Washington. I think it will come in the grassroots level. I think in the United States right now, there's a greater and greater awareness on the part of parents that drugs being illegal is not the answer. I mean, for heaven's sakes, drugs are all over prisons. If we can't keep drugs out of prisons, how are we going to keep them out of a free society?
So are you suggesting we should turn the schools into prisons and then legalize drugs and solve the funding process?
Some children already think they are prisons.
They're not far off in that. Final question. Was it a good thing that Mario Vargas Llosa won the Nobel Prize for Literature?
Sure. Yeah, very good. I mean, he has a lifelong commitment against dictatorship. And I think that's extremely admirable, and he's been consistent on it. I mean, he doesn't back down when it comes to Chile, and he doesn't back down when it comes to modern-day Venezuela.
Mary Anastasia O'Grady of The Wall Street Journal, thank you for talking to Reason TV.
Thank you.